Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 625, July 2022.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell. This is an episode where we normally do a sort of a wrap-up of a season of like a TV show that we like and watch. And the problem is that they make so much Star Trek now that we decided to do one episode about three new seasons of Star Trek. We're going to talk in this episode about season 4 of Star Trek Discovery, season 2 of Star Trek Picard, and season 1 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. All on Paramount Plus or various other channels and other places on the internet and other planets and galaxies and markets and I don't know, like you saw it, right? Joining me to talk about Star Trek are these wonderful people. I guess they're Star Trek fans. Joe Rosensteel is here. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Command code 246810.
Oh, you're still on that one? Starfleet's bad IT security continues apace. Gene McDonald is also here. Hello.
Hello. Very happy to be here. I feel that we have had to wait for all these three seasons to be over to even have time to do a podcast.
I know. It's been a long, long time. 30 weeks of episodes or 28 weeks or something of episodes. It's a lot of Star Trek. A lot of new Star Trek. David J. Lohr is here. Hi, David.
Hi. Now, I should address this since you thought I was killed off in the penultimate episode of The Vulcan Hello.
It's true.
Because for Scott to live, I had to die.
Must die.
I had to step out into the icy cold wastes and step off the podcast. But but that was really my evil twin, Lohr.
Lore.
That's right.
Yeah, I think canonically you are dead in the Vulcan Hello, but this is not canonical over here. We're like the Ready Room over here, something like that. Just tell us how you're feeling about being killed off on the Vulcan Hello.
On the Vulcan Hello, my middle initial is R.
Mm, weird. And renowned Star Wars fan Tony Sindelar joins us.
You know, Jason, you and I are of a kind. In a different reality, I could have called you friend.
Today is not that day, and this is not that reality.
I will just mention that in my regular Star Wars podcast, A Complicated Profession with Dan, I mention the episode of Strange New World. We watch that every week, pretty much every week on that Star Wars podcast, because I contain multitudes. Or when I say I contain multitudes, I say I contain two things. I contain Star Wars and Star Trek. The ratio is not always even, but I got both of them in there.
Right. And in addition to, of course, A Complicated Profession, the Star Wars podcast, Gene hosts Voyager Revisited, a Star Trek Voyager podcast here at The Incomparable, and I co-host with Scott McNulty, The Vulcan Hello, where we do week-by-week discussions of
For 30 weeks in a row now.
Star Trek Discovery Season 4, we will start with. We return to the far, far future of Star Trek Discovery to discover what is going on with Michael Burnham, who is now the captain of the USS Discovery, and her crew. This turns into a season-long story arc about a mysterious force that ends up being known by a boring acronym, the DMA, the Dark Matter Anomaly, that is destroying planets. It destroys her partner's homeland. That's right. Booker, Cleveland Booker, Book to his friends and crime partners, I guess. His home planet of Quajon, seen only in an empty forest in a living room, is destroyed. But it's very sad. I mean, we never see Alderaan in Star Wars, right? Like,
That's true.
So then again, Princess Leia has it together much more than Book does in this season. She kind of just gets with the program, and Book is very upset. Anyway, there's a mad scientist who tries to figure out what's going on with the dark matter anomaly, and there's a so they run off, Book and the mad scientist, and they're gonna blow it up and try to kill a lot of people in order to save the galaxy. Whereas the Federation crew wants to meet whoever's responsible and, you know, have a very stern conversation with them about what they've done and see if they can solve things. And it all kind of climaxes in a trip outside the galactic barrier to a mysterious kind of like society of big space whale people who have who've been doing this and are very apologetic about it and didn't really understand that they were destroying planets with nice plasma TVs in them. and then everything works out, and we think Book is dead, but he's not. And that is my very, very short impromptu summary of Star Trek Discovery Season 4. I'm going to come out and say it. I think this was the least successful season of live action Star Trek to date.
Oh wow!
And I feel like
ever
I feel, of live action. Oh, sorry, of the new streaming okay. live action Star Trek okay. today.
You oh, had okay. me scared Ooh. There.
Yeah,
right of the modern. And I have to say, to date, I'm sorry, I got confused there because I think Sisnu Picard is open to discussion, but season 4 of Star Trek Discovery. I mean that for me, I felt like they are really struggling. Obviously, this is the last time I think any of these Paramount Plus shows is going to get more than 10 episodes. I think they struggle trying to fill their story through all those episodes, and it has huge sags in the middle. I think there were a lot of very weird character leaps that had to happen in order to get the plot to move forward. I think it's a shame because I actually like a lot of the characters. I think Saru is still one of the great characters. Although, I'll also mention, they write Saru out for a while, and they write Tilly out, who is also basically my other favorite character on the show. And I'm left wondering what creative decisions are they making and why. I felt like this was a mess, and it's too bad because I like the idea of them having a canon free, you know, future to play around in. And instead what we got is something that was a plot that was probably not enough to fill 13 episodes and some weird character choices, especially with Book, I would say. Mm-hmm. So what did everybody else think of Discovery Season 4? Not to start us down, but I'm down on it. I'm just revealing I'm down on it.
You know, and I believe Star Trek Discovery, aired before the other ones that we are will be talking about. So it looks, I think, worse in comparison when we see some of the highs that it gets nowhere near. I think thinking back to my experience of watching it without having seen other Star Trek that I would be much more excited about later, I always remember enjoying it. I enjoy the character moments a great deal on Star Trek Discovery. I love so many of those characters, and it's like you just want more of all of them. And, you know, they even did better things with kind of fleshing out some of the bridge characters who in previous seasons felt like they were, you know, basically
supernumeraries.
Just, you know, props or something.
Seat fillers.
Yeah. Yeah. So I enjoy that. But I think I was the expectation that we are now going to set a Star Trek in a time that no Star Trek has ever been at, and in fact is way beyond any Star Trek, perhaps set my expectations in a really lofty way that then they didn't get anywhere near in terms of, you know, the Federation is in disarray and things are bad in the universe and we've got to save the universe. I know you just saved the universe last episode or last season, but like back on that horse. I keep showing up for the character moments, which I love. And Michael Burnham is a really enjoyable Star Trek character to me. So I love the crew and I love the cast that portrays that crew, but the episodes, the plots are not Star Trek at its greatest in terms of telling compelling science fiction stories week to week, in Tony's opinion.
One thing that Scott and I talked about every week as we walked through it is the feeling that Star Trek Discovery is actually very good at characters and emotions and actually very bad at plot. And that's the sort of like went to get through some of the episodes. You have to be like, I see what they were doing here because the characters took an interesting personal journey in this plot that kind of didn't make sense.
No, I think that, I mean, they had these great characters, some, you know, since the beginning and some like Book who are new and also, their young one that they picked up. And I can't, Adira, yes, right. Like I like Adira and I like Gray, like I like a lot they were doing, but what they did with Book and Michael Burnham in this season was just so headache inducing every week to be like they really set them up as they're going to have a completely unreconcilable difference between them, but you know she's going to keep pretending like she can be the objective Starfleet captain. It really didn't make any sense. And I just wish that they had left Book out of this mess because I think they kind of ruined him and they didn't need, I don't think his loss and then his determination to destroy the DMA brought anything to this story.
It seemed like we could have gotten a better story where Book in his grief is hoodwinked by an evil mad scientist who maybe isn't so evil. He's just very misunderstood about things because of his own trauma. Every villain has a thing about how something bad happened to them and now they're going to hurt everybody else. But we didn't get that. It wasn't on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I felt. There were so many good elements in this season. There were good moments and occasionally just a solid episode, but yeah, they just can't plot 13 to 14 episodes, because they're trying to tie it all into a single story and they just don't have enough story sometimes. Mm-hmm. Did I like some of the side quests? Sure. Did I like them better than the actual storyline we were following? Yes. you know, it's just so frustrating and it's frustrating what they did to Book. It's frustrating.
He's a streetwise traveler who's a smuggler and he gets completely hoodwinked by this
falls for the first mad scientist across his path.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have to give him some slack. He was mourning that living room. Mm-hmm. It was a cool 70s living room. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. It had
bunch of trees and there were a bunch of kids just off camera.
Bunch of space squirrels we'll never know. Yeah.
So. No.
and the bugs in the sky and I mean just so much. But I will say Species 10C, which I wish we had a different name for them because it sounds like a product from the makers of Hi-C and V8. But Species 10C. Yeah. The visualization of that and the learning to communicate with them was beautiful. Yeah. I loved that.
Very Star Trek-y and very fun.
I wish there had been a story that supported it.
One of the things I did to go off what you're saying, David, is it's not just the story for the season, but also those micro stories of each episode that are supposed to be tying into those, because they can only go so far before the next point that they're supposed to hand off to the next episode. They struggle and they don't deliver on those things of like the first contact experience that all has to be shoved to the very end of the season. And we're left with an enormous void for most of the season in terms of what is 10C? Why are they taking so long to investigate it? They dither around talking about how there's a galaxy threatening anomaly that's, you know, just sitting there, and they go to a gambling yacht and they do some other stuff. Like there is
a lack of
urgency too. And you feel it really in the episodes themselves because you're left wondering about the season plot because the episode itself doesn't have enough energy to get through its own plot from A to B. And it's just really frustrating to sit through some of those ones.
I was just going to ask if this is hanging out over other people's experiences of watching Discovery, which is the what there's a Short Trek episode, which maybe not everyone has seen all Short Treks, but there's a Short Trek where a strange space traveler ends up on the Discovery and is talking to the computer, and the Discovery has been abandoned for apparently a long amount of time, and but is still kind of trekking along with a computer, but with no crew. And I because that has been introduced for so far back, but not resolved, that keeps hanging in my head with every episode. Every time they put the Discovery in peril, it's this thing where it's like, well, I know the Discovery will be okay, but maybe something bad happens to the crew and they all have to evacuate. And I don't know if other people are able to put that out of their mind as they enjoy Star Trek Discovery, but I have that one, you know, Short Trek, which is like, there's 15 minutes of it, but I think about it with every like Discovery episode. Will this be relevant? And the answer so far keeps being nope.
I think
I don't know.
It's weird. It's weirder than that because they have built up Zora now as their mm-hmm. artificially yeah. intelligent computer who is seen in that Short Trek. But in the mm-hmm. Short Trek, it is Discovery as classic Discovery, right, from season one and season two. Mm-hmm. Well, they've given it a new designation and it's got the new floaty warp nacelles yep. and things like that. So it kind of doesn't make sense. And so I'm not entirely sure that hasn't been sort of like decanonized as a... an imaginary story that they used as basically raw material to build the season three plot of
okay.
Because he mentions the guy in that mentions the Vidresh, mm-hmm. Which gets mentioned again. It's the Federation. I don't know. I'm not. They would now have to bend over backward to get it to fit, which seems very weird to me.
Ah, but now I remember talking about this in Slack when the season was going on, and I suggested an idea that works, and you liked it, because I remember you going, oh, that's really nice. The thought that Calypso is now a dream that Zora has. She's processing things differently, like our subconscious does. And so that could make it work.
Right.
I mean,
a
Calypso
dream.
Is
it's
a
not an imaginary
years.
Story. It's an AI
dream. Yeah,
how's
which
that
is
work,
kind
Tony?
Of a wild idea.
I guess I should embrace that just so I don't think about that with every subject Discovery episode. It's like, is this coming? Are they going to have to evacuate the ship at the end of this episode?
Because you've got proto-book, you've got Zora, you've got it 1,000 years in the future.
No, it's so clearly just sort of set up on that front. I wanted to mention, we talked about characters a little bit. Like, I think Burnham is a character we've been following, and she finally gets to be the captain. I think that's good. I think having her have the struggle between her duty and her personal issues with Book is good. I didn't like the president of the Federation standing on the bridge counter, you know, raising her eyebrow every time she gives a command. I thought that was a little bit silly, but I like her kind of progression and you know, good actress, good character. That's all good. And I wanted to mention the space dads too, because we have Culber and Stamets as the space dads for Gray and Adira, and I thought that was all really sweet as well. Mm-hmm. And again, the show does a good job with characters and feelings. And those are not my complaints. Although I am curious, again, I mentioned Tilly getting written out. I mentioned Saru being sidelined and then brought back, which seems like a weird thing to send him away at the end of the previous episode and then immediately recall him, but that's what they do. And then Gray, the show seems to very quickly try to get rid of Gray and send him off to Trill and be done with him. So I don't know whether there were like contract issues or availability issues or if it was COVID related, but like there were some very strange decisions that the show has made, honestly, bringing Michelle Yeoh into the future at the end of season two and then spending six episodes getting her out in the middle of season three. It's like, well, why did you bring her? And that's one of the things that the show also kind of baffles me about, is the characters that get shunted off when we might want them to stay. I didn't really like Gray. I was kind of happy for Gray to have his storyline kind of continue off screen and let Adira focus on integrating with the crew. I thought that was maybe a better storyline for them. But you know, anyway, I'm just saying again, like I'm baffled by some of the character moves, but I do think that there's an emotional resonance to the show that's really successful. It's just that Wow. Whenever they conceived of this story, I think that they thought they could fit it in 13, and it was really more like an 8.
I would have given it a 4.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not that much.
Well, what I would say is that there is the species 10C thing could have also been more, right? They could have spent more time there, but they wanted it to all be on a ticking clock of like, we've got to do this in just a few minutes or the Earth will be destroyed. And of course, it's the Earth. The Earth will be destroyed.
That was awful.
Yeah.
That part was awful.
And I think that one of the things that really made that incredibly eye-rolling, in addition to it being Earth, is that we were sort of promised, I think, some of the, we're going to like bring the Federation back together. We're going to unite people, but we don't spend any of the season doing it. We just get Earth coming back to the Federation at the very, very end of the season. Right. And it doesn't feel earned by any of the actions that we have had our characters go through.
Now, before that, we have the one grumpy person, the general from Titan or whatever. And there is that very perplexing scene, which, again, I think I understand it from a COVID perspective, where it turns out that the big Federation meeting is a bunch of people standing over like the handrails in a big atrium at the mall.
Yeah.
It's like, what is that?
My notes were actually space mall. Awesome.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, you know, obviously a worldwide pandemic is hard. let me be the first to put that out there.
Yeah, like the what was really cool, the way this season started off, that I think it was the first scene was Book and Michael trying to make contact with the
butterfly people.
Moth mm-hmm. people yeah. who were awesome, and that was like exciting, especially, you know, the reveal that they wanted to liberate Grudge because we were obviously oppressing the creatures on our ship, and that is what I was hoping the season would be like. It's like, oh, you know, it's kind of the ups and downs of multiple first contacts. And instead, they quickly, you know, first of all, I hated that president. She just, not just because she was dumb on the bridge of Discovery, but just generally, there was just, there wasn't a very inspiring quality, I thought, to that character. So
she's the police chief that gets in your main character's way, right?
Yeah.
It means she gets results, you stupid chief, right? It is that is what that character is.
You don't understand. It's 900 years later. We're imagining a whole new world where we've invented this new science fiction concept we call micromanaging. You're gonna love it. Just wild fantasy stuff.
It's nanomanaging in the future, Tony.
What was she? Human, Cardassian, and
Bajoran.
Something else.
And Bajoran.
Bajoran. Yeah. So that could have been more interesting, but they really just left her as like an annoying human. And anyway, but the fact that they would have like these like, okay, Federation, we're going to vote. And they're voting stupid too. Like they're voting with some kind of like iPhones, virtual iPhone voting at the mall. But yeah, so I mean, we'd been led through the whole third season to care about the Federation coming, you know, a thing again. And that was very moving at the end of season 3. And yet then it's like, oh, and they're going to, as you say, meet at the mall and just have an annoying lady like tell them what to do. So that just, you know, that just did not work for me, the political side of this. And I would have much rather seen them just doing
missions,
first contact of the week,
Star Trek missions. And well, and I know that they want this show to be different from Strange New Worlds and not be standalones, but I feel like the rhythm of the Star Trek episode where you go to a planet could be integrated better with an overall plot like this. I think one of the problems that happens is immediately after the aftermath of season 1, the Discovery is pulled off of their missions. They are brought back because only Stamets, I guess, is a scientist. Stamets and Tarka, the mad scientist, are the only scientists that they have in the Federation. Like, it's this thing where we get at several points, it's like only Stamets can solve this problem, which is very weird. And I thought, look, Discovery is, I know they're interesting people from the past and all, but like, it is just another ship. Other than when you need a spore drive, it's just another ship. You could have them out there having more missions, stumbling upon clues, and like, and maybe being the ones who, unlikely as it is, stumble upon a key piece of information that allows the greater Federation to solve the problem. But instead, they're immediately centered as the task force for all of this.
And then, Jason, this show was created in late 2021. At that time, legally, you were required to save the galaxy. You had to have a giant 10-episode arc, or 13 even, you know. And we just didn't know that anything else was possible.
In modern Star Trek, you're right.
In 2021, that was the extent of what our technology was capable of. And our feeble minds and our primitive civilizations that weren't so great.
I know I've railed against this on Vulcan Hello a lot, but I'll just mention it here. I feel like the creative failure of Star Trek Discovery really is a writer's room problem. And I don't think it's necessarily the people in the writer's room. It may be that to a certain degree, but I feel like it's the misuse of the writer's room, because this feels very much like a show where they broke down the season episode by episode, and then they put the stakes in the ground, and then everybody in the writer's room was sent off to write their episodes. And it feels like that, where it's sort of like, this is the chunk of content for this episode. And like, some episodes are not that interesting, but that was the story they had to tell, so they're boring and padded. There are other episodes where there's like a really interesting thing that happens, except it's rushed because they've got to hit their plot point to get to the end. It feels very engineered. Nobody really gets a chance to go kind of off the beaten path at all. And they are moving furniture around, especially late in the season, in order to get to the ending that they want. And the funny thing about that, the ironic thing about that, and then I'll stop complaining about this, I swear, for at least 5 minutes, is that in season three, they engineered an ending that I thought was good. And so I kept holding out hope that season four, I was going to roll my eyes at a bunch of episodes where they were clearly just setting up the ending they wanted to tell. But if the ending was worth it, it would be okay. And the problem is that the ending really wasn't worth it. And so it ended up being like, we did all this for what? And that's not great. But that's where I ended up.
There were just no memorable episodes. I mean, even the one that you can say, oh, they went to a casino yacht. I just didn't care.
I thought the casino yacht was... fun, but it was not as fun as it should have been.
Yeah, it wasn't as fun as it should have been.
Tilly taking the cadets on
that
planet.
That was good.
Yeah,
that was a good episode. And then, unfortunately, it was like, this is how we're going to get rid of Tilly.
And I don't know if that was an actor thing, you know, where she just decided she didn't want to be on anymore. With Saru, I figure it's because they were still trying to tie up loose ends from season three, and you know, having him go off with Sokal makes sense, but then it's like, oh well, we have to have our character back on our show.
Yeah, so we just bring him right back. Episode three, I thought I really liked the concept of. That's the one where there's like the moon or whatever that's actually a generation ship with a bunch of aliens in cryosleep. Yeah. And again, it's one of those things where I love the Star Trek-y nature of that episode, but because they've got their plot points to hit, it really just gets resolved with a wave. I think it's maybe literally a wave of a hand over a console that solves the whole thing. And it's like, oh, but you could have spent more time with that. But they're like, nope, we got to move on. We got an outline we're following here. And I felt the outline.
There's a line from Strange New Worlds, not to jump ahead, but there is a line from Strange New Worlds that I thought of this episode of Discovery when Uhura says, that's not how linguistics works.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly how they solve it. It's like, oh, suddenly I understand it all.
That's not how computer programming works.
No, you don't.
Well, any final words about Discovery season four? I mean, it's a show that I want to like, and I like a lot of the characters of, and I just wish they'd tell better stories.
I want more Tig Notaro. Just give me more Tig Notaro.
There were some travel issues
so
with Tig Notaro, unfortunately. But I agree. Tig Notaro's great.
But yeah, I want more individual episodes that maybe tie into a larger arc.
I'll take more David Cronenberg too, by the way.
I'm more David Cronenberg.
If we're going to have to download exposition, have it be done by David Cronenberg.
Because he does it better than most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just, you know, I had such high hopes for this series when, you know, we all did. It was so exciting because it was the first new Trek. But I feel like they have frittered away a lot of our excitement, and I assume they're doing a season 5.
Yes. They're shooting it now or just finished shooting it? Yeah.
So my excitement level is very low thanks to this season, but I will of course watch it when it comes out.
Yeah, I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt at all. When they had their trailer prior to season 4 come out, and it was like, oh, there's this anomaly. And I was like, no, you can't make the whole season out of that. And then they do. So yeah. It's just like, well.
And it wasn't like the anomaly led to a thing which led to a thing. It really didn't. It just, the anomaly was the thing until they got to the origins of the anomaly, and that was the whole thing.
13 episodes.
13 episodes of
the anomaly.
Well, that's never, they're not getting 13 again. So there's that at least.
DMA is DMA. Not as exciting a term as V'ger.
DMA and species 10C really uninspired too.
Yeah. Good thing we didn't have any time to explore anything about why we could name them other things or what they could do or the function
the
of how they could work.
Why the universe needs a Federation, what is the relationship between Starfleet and the Federation, what is it like for people to be 900 years out of their own time. Well, so many things we could have done, and instead we did not. Oh, well.
I still am frustrated by the fact that you've got these people who are completely out of time, have lost everybody, and other than a little bit with Tilly, where she's trying to kind of like deal with the cadets and she feels like a person out of time, but like we didn't really see people come onto the ship who are like, oh, you guys are from the past. Like they just don't want to talk about it because I think they just want to pretend that it's not the case, but it is. You chose this path, but you don't want to engage with the choices you made.
I'm reminded of Voyager melds the Federation and Maquis crews pretty well, but there's lots of episodes about, like, here's where it didn't go great. it's that. Whereas here, it's just like, nope, everyone's fine. You know, 900 years.
They
not
lost
a big
everybody
deal.
That they ever knew or loved, but it's okay.
Yeah. You know, there should be people who, let alone technology or society, like, you have to imagine that, like, the Federation is going to be a little different in what they care about or what they value or how they feel about different species now. Like, you know, don't just show us here's a Ferengi admiral. Like, let's talk about what does it mean for the Ferengi to be in the Federation and in Starfleet and what that means.
And one of the few things that they set up in season 3 that was kind of interesting was the thought that the Romulans and the Vulcans had finally come back together and were standing outside the Federation. And how long did it take for them to be like, oh, well, it's all good. We're back in the Federation. We're fine. They're look like us.
Saru bats his eyes at the head of Navarre, and she's like, all right, we're coming back. We're back in.
Yeah, you know what? Saru is a very important person to have on your crew. Very versatile.
Yeah, he is. He's very calming.
Yeah.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Let's move on to Picard season 2. Oh boy. In Picard season 2, Admiral Picard is called into an incursion by a Borg ship, but his ship blows up and Q appears and has thrown him in an alternate timeline that is authoritarian and apocalyptic, and told that he must go back to the 21st century to Los Angeles, where they shoot the TV show Star Trek Picard, in order to change the future by solving a problem in the past. And And so they go back in time and they do it, and then they come back forward at the end to see if they've changed things at all. And Picard and Q have some conversations, and Whoopi Goldberg is in it as Guinan, and then there's another actor who plays young Guinan. And so that's Star Trek Picard season two, a season that I thought started incredibly well and really looked like it was going to be a weird melding of like Star Trek First Contact and Star Trek IV, which is like, yes, please. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, stop me if you've heard this before. Then it kind of went off the rails, the plot wise.
You know, they only had 10 episodes to go off the rails with, Jason, so that can confines
to it. They snapped to it.
If they'd had 13, imagine how many more rails they could have gone off.
Just slower going off the rails. With Discovery season 4, I'm disappointed. With Star Trek Picard season 2, I'm mad. Because it is a situation where I am incredibly frustrated that you would take this beloved character and then you would take some of these other beloved characters and you'd get this season started with a bang, and then you would just not know where you were going. And then just meander through all kinds of stuff. You'd say, oh, this didn't happen because this timeline event never occurred. But then at the end of the season, you're just like, whoop, timeline, who cares? And so it's just like, I don't understand what it is you wanted me to take away from watching this series of, you know, apart from we were able to go back in time and have people do some stuff and then go forwards in time. And there are announcements beyond this season about what's supposed to be happening next season in terms of cast and other things, which also make me very furious because of the way that they wrapped up with some of these people who will not be joining us again.
You just worry that they've spent all their time. I know they're different people, but like all the energy has gone into like lining up the schedules of returning Patrick Stewart and John DeLancey and then, you know, triple that for the next season. But it's like, you know, it's like, Patrick Stewart, he is a delight. This is like an important natural resource that we need to conserve and value here. Mm-hmm. And this is what you did with it? Like, I mean, I enjoy seeing him. I like my hour with Patrick Stewart that I got every time we had this episode. But it was like, but this is what we pulled him out of, you know, whatever Patrick Stewart's up to. Otherwise, I imagine, you know, just making people happy and adopting dogs and burning money or something and just having the time of his life. And, you know, I don't think he has to work. It just seems like, couldn't we have done something? couldn't we have done this right? You know,
Joe took my answer. I was sitting here thinking, you know how you say I'm not angry, I'm disappointed? I'm actually angry about season 2 of Picard. because everyone said, oh, the first episode start off with a bang. You know, I'm one of the few people who watched the first episode and went, I'd like to see where you go with that before I say it was good. And it just doesn't, none of it holds together. None of it makes sense. There are so many weird little details. It's like, hey, look, we remembered to mention Jackson Roykirk. Remember him? And then when we see a close-up of a Romulan with bloodshot eyes, they're red, not green. I mean, it's like, if you're going to be that picky
Nerd alert.
If you're going to put all those Easter eggs in,
David,
get
the bloodshot
right.
Eyes are the least of the problems of Star Trek.
Oh, no, I agree. I totally agree. I'm just saying.
Problems, my bloodshot eyes.
I think the pieces in place are here to do something well. But like, if we back up, what do you want to see from a season of Star Trek Picard? Well, Tony already got to it. You want to see Patrick Stewart doing Patrick Stewart things. And then you say, okay, here's my pitch for you. Q is going to come back and he's dying maybe. And this is like Q's last final encounter with Picard. It's like, okay, all right. Well, what I want to see then is Q and Picard scenes. And they're like, well,
yeah, like every episode, please.
Mostly they're not going to be in scenes together. And when we use Q in the past, he's going to be kind of inexplicably just like a, you know, chin stroking bearded, villain. Like, maha, now I'm doing a thing. It's like, I don't think Q should have been in the past at all. I don't think it made sense for him to be there other than to remind you that Q is in it. It was a mess. And then I'll throw out there, what's the other thing this season is about? Well, it's about the Borg and weird things going on with the Borg. And in a super inspired episode 2, they kidnap a Borg queen and use her as a time machine. Like, I think it's so fun and weird and clever. And And the actress who plays the Borg Queen, who was on 24, what's her name? Annie Wershing.
Annie Wershing.
She does a really great job as a Borg Queen. And yeah. then her little interactions with Agnes, where they enter each other's kind of minds. And then she sort of like has like Battlestar Galactica, like she has kind of a head Borg Queen who's trying to take
or
over.
Or Scorpius on Farscape.
Yeah. and I think, okay, to go back to my premise, what else do you have to work with here? And the answer is a Borg Queen. And again, they kind of fumble it. And they're like, how about we get Brent Spiner to play Elon Musk?
What? Well, yeah. he's Elon Musk, and he's desperate for funding. And then all of a sudden, he's rich enough to buy his way.
Broke and extravagantly wealthy as needed.
He buys his way onto the NASA board and has access to everything. So why was he begging for money?
This is also a 10-episode story that I think has 2 episodes of filler in it, which is kind of...
Yeah, it does.
I'd say it's got like 6 episodes of filler.
At least 1.5, which I feel like is unacceptable for 10 episodes.
Agnes as the Borg Queen, or the Borg Queen as Agnes, has a breakout, and she goes walking through the streets of LA.
There's
and
one episode where she's like down the block from them.
It's a great cliffhanger. It's like the Borg is loose on 21st century LA. Yeah,
she's in the alley behind the bar.
Yeah, she is going to be assimilating people and building a Borg army, and we're going to have to find out a way to deal with this. And the answer is she spends an episode in the alley and goes into a bar full of people and doesn't assimilate anybody, just breaks a window and leaves.
And Allison Pill is lovely, you know, in this.
She's great.
Yeah, the character is fun. It's just is not on a trajectory that
it's misused, and the pacing is weird. And I do wonder, I mentioned about the Discovery casting. I wonder about the casting choices here. It feels very much like somebody who's in charge of these shows is forced to make casting decisions before they have their stories. And so, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. Issa Briones shouldn't have been in this season at all.
Nope.
But apparently she was under contract. So they invented this Soong daughter character for her to play and wrote her other character out, which is weird, but they chose to do that. Like, there's a bunch of things like that. Of like, well, why did you even put this character,
or
this
Elnor.
Actor in it? Or Elnor, who is
Elnor.
A ghost for a while.
I didn't mind Issa Briones having the shift, and it made sense. You know, okay, you've got Brent Spiner as, you know, a human. Fine. And yes, everybody in the Soong family, all the men look
They're
like the same guy. All the women look like the same woman. Okay, whatever. I didn't mind that so much. And I liked that, you know, at least in the beginning of that part of the storyline, they weren't just doing Frankenstein. They were doing Rappaccini's Daughter by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Sure.
And then they didn't.
They were done
and
with
it was
that.
Like, another great idea that went nowhere. But yeah, Elnor, what was the point of Elnor?
To fridge him for Rafi, I think, is the
point. Yeah, and then they didn't really do anything with that.
So much didn't work for me, but I think Soong and his many daughters, that could have been left out 100% out of this. There was too much in the 10 episodes. For a thing that dragged, it's interesting that it dragged with still too many things were going on.
That's the weird part. It's like the emphasis is all wrong. Like, you've got these really good things and you just don't use them. And instead we get like there's a car chase and there's a bus breakout. And I have to say did they have budget problems? Because the whole move to go to 21st century LA is super lazy as a science fiction show set in 21st century LA. But if you're going to do it, go all the way with your Star Trek 4. But they like really lean into being an episode of Chips a couple of times.
It's true.
I mean, there's the stolen police car and the bus heist, and there, we have characters are arrested by the police twice and put on ice.
Don't forget the FBI interrogation scene that we didn't need.
Wacky FBI guy in episode 8. We're gonna throw this in
let's just detour everything at episode 8 in 10 episodes.
Wow.
And nobody's even mentioned what I hated the most was the whole Picard family
backstory. That was what I was
going to
say. Yeah.
Oh, my past. God. It was just so tedious. And the whole mother thing was like, you've got to be kidding me. And they really drew out. And the only thing I liked about Picard's family was Baltar as his father, speaking of Battlestar Galactica.
James Callis as his father.
James Callis.
But he doesn't recognize him for, you know, two-thirds of the episode.
I'm willing to go with that as a kind of a vision sort of thing, and that he's not really in his right mind, and maybe he's being representing his father as James Callis or something like that. But I thought that was one of the rare parts of that storyline that was not obvious throughout, right? Like fact that it's his dad is who that therapist is on the Enterprise, and that his dad, who we met in TNG, and is it his dad or is his,
no. his
is it an uncle?
His brother.
It's his brother.
Oh, but they talk about his dad. His brother's angry, and the whole idea is the implication is his dad was like his brother, and that they didn't get along. And we meet his dad, and we know that Picard like resents his dad and loved his mother. And we meet James Callis, and we're like,
and we won't mention the brother for some reason.
Well, yeah, but he's gone away to school or something. So we meet James Callis, and it's a nice little twist where it's sort of like, no, you've mythologized your mother, but your mother was actually really troubled and I was protecting you from her. And I liked that idea that, like, after all this time, Jean-Luc Picard has not really embraced and understood the actual truth of his mother's situation and his father's situation, and instead decided to just sort of blame his father for what happens to his mother. Then again, his father does lock his suicidal mother in a room. And in the 21st century, where they just have little locks on doors and it's like they're in the 19th century. And that way, and we get back to the part of it that was super obvious and telegraphed and yet is portrayed as being a shocking revelation of the most obvious thing that could possibly happen.
Not just the key, but somehow they had rope. They had cliche prop department rope for this woman is going to hang herself in the conservatory somehow in the 24th century.
We did buy this French mansion from Mr. Body, and that may have been a mistake.
Monsieur Body.
We got rid of all the lead pipe, but we still had the rope, and you know, these things happen. No, every one of those things of, haha, we surprised you. No, you didn't. No. Nothing in this surprised me.
And it's
the whole, like, even in the first episode of, oh, here's this strange Borg queen. Well, it's going to be someone we meet. Oh, and she's using the phrase that Picard's mother used. Well, it's not going to be Picard's mother, so it's going to be someone else. Who else would know it? Oh, it's Agnes. Then 10 episodes later, you're like, Agnes.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was okay, because I thought by that point, even the show was like, well, you know, it's Agnes, right? We literally showed Agnes going off with the Borg queen, so you know it's going to be Agnes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm okay with that. Like I said, I was surprised also by some of the particular interactions between Agnes and the Borg queen. I thought they did some the weird cyberpunk kind of, like, I'm in her brain and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I thought that was kind of fun. But Patrick Stewart is a limited resource. We're only getting three seasons of this show. Yeah. And one
he's
of the
not
seasons
renewable.
Was, he's not renewable. And one of the seasons was this season. And I look at it and I'm like, oh, what a waste. What a waste.
A lot of the things I like about it, you know, I like that Patrick Stewart is in it, but he's just kind of there. And there's, you know, that the action scenes with him in the last few episodes are kind of sad. You know, there are things I like.
Tony,
you know,
didn't
I
you
like,
say it's an episode where Scott on Vulcan Hello. It's an episode where
an old man
walks
across the room,
away.
Picks up a gun. You know.
Having an action scene with two old men is not going to turn out well.
The whole thing at the gala where, oh, you know, Picard is in danger and coincidentally
a billionaire is behind the wheel of a car. Watch out.
Well, it's like, why is he driving anywhere? He's supposedly in the middle of the gala, like flirting with people. And then suddenly he's just driving a car and hits Picard. But, you know, how did he know they were going to be there? I mean, little things
that's
like
also
that.
A funny thing where where they get rid of Renee Picard as soon as they don't need her anymore. Yes. And they're like, oh, she left. She left. Yeah. She returned to her home planet.
She left the scene of an accident. Don't write her up. She's an astronaut.
And now she's not relevant anymore. So it's disappointing. I think there's a lot more raw material here that could have been something better. I think they misused John DeLancey, honestly. I think they misused Patrick Stewart. I will say, here's my positive thing to say, which is, I think Jeri Ryan is great. I wish
Sevenna Raffi, we didn't mention them enough.
Michelle Hurd is good. Jeri Ryan is great. And I kept forgetting that Jeri Ryan was a legacy Star Trek character because, you know, she wasn't on TNG. She was on Voyager. But, like, she's good. Mm-hmm. And I wish they had given her better stuff this season. But I kept being reminded, like, she's legitimately good. That was a good find and a good choice to bring her into this. And I hope that they find something else to do with her, because I actually think that this kind of post Voyager 7 is an interesting character.
My two positive things for season 2. Seven and Raffi are terrific together. I want that spinoff. I want a series with them.
As long as they're not stealing police cars.
Yes. No. I never go back to the 21st century.
Could we interest you in a fire truck that they steal?
Is it in space?
Yes.
Space fire truck is pretty awesome. I would love more with them. I just want better writing for them. I'm glad that they're both coming back to season 3. I hope they're not misused in season 3 or shunted aside. Because, like, I mean, basically...
They're coming back in season 3 to be in one scene in episode 1 and they go, goodbye. Why?
Here we are to hand something off to, Franks or someone.
That's right.
In a way, this season was like the rise of Skywalker of Star Trek. Because it's like, here, let's take all these characters that you fell in love with in season 1 and we're just going to take them off the board by the end. Nope. They're never coming back. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
goodbye.
I didn't even mention Chris Rios, Santiago Cabrera, who was such a find in season 1. Is great here and is inexplicably given his romance plot with the doctor and her son, inexplicably, until you realize that they've decided to write him off the show, which is weird because remember when I said earlier with Discovery, like, why did you get rid of Tilly? It's like, Rios is great. Why did you kill off Rios? I mean, he killed by living his whole life, but like he
killed
but,
by
like,
time.
He was like, you put Han Solo in charge of a starship. It's kind of cool. He's super charismatic. I understand he had another series commitment, and I think he couldn't
too
shoot.
Charismatic. He must die.
he couldn't shoot season 3, so they wrote him out. But it's like, why did you take that character off the board? He's so good. But they just took him off the board and had him do dumb stuff so that he could in the past.
The really? Junk food of the 21st century is just so compelling. Yeah. I mean, sure, I could rescue these people from their troubled time and bring them with me, but no, I will stay here and eat the junk food of our time.
These lethal cigars are great.
Yeah.
I think that, that romance angle was so horrible in a season of things that really didn't add up. That one really also was painful to watch. And Star Trek isn't known for doing romance well.
No.
But this was really bad.
Well, in early 2022, we did not yet have the technology for quality Star Trek romance. But scientists are hard at work. Gene, scientists are working it around the clock. And they promise in months they will be able to deliver everything you need.
David, you had another positive thing?
The other positive thing, which also comes with criticism, the end with John DeLancey, the moment where he looks Picard in the face and says, "You are special to me. This is why I've messed with you all your life, but you are special to me." And they hug, and Picard chooses to hug him. And, it's a beautiful moment. That moment worked for me. Did this season earn that moment? God, no. Oh, it was terrible. But that moment worked for me.
Yeah,
I loved seeing those characters do that.
That's another example of a misdirect that I appreciated, because I kept thinking throughout the season that it was going to be revealed that the reason this was all happening is actually because Q is trying to redeem Picard, because Picard has more to do in his life, and it's important that he gets there. And so you get to this moment, and he's like, no, you have no more destiny to fulfill. I just like you. I was surprised by that. I actually thought that was like, oh, This is not part of plot machinations. It's just these two characters. Okay, like that was fun.
And I mean, did the plot that, you know, did the reason that Q set this into motion make sense? No.
No.
Did anything that happened with Q make sense?
No.
No.
I'll also point out as we wrap this one up, I'll just throw out there, I don't understand why Wesley Crusher is the manager
He's a doctor.
Orla Brady's
he's a Time Lord
character.
He's HR for the Travelers. You know, he's in charge of recruiting. Yeah.
But that was again when you're saying, is this a ridiculous Star Trek Picard? Is it just a ridiculous nostalgia trip? And you could argue, especially in season one, no, they're doing some new things. That scene with Wesley Crusher is like.
Oh, that's totally nostalgia trip.
My fear is that is what all of season three will be.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm worried about.
And I will just, I'm going to watch all of it. I want to see all those people, but I'll be sad. Yeah. You know,
yep.
I don't know.
Like I said, this season made me angry.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, Jason, way to bring us together to talk about two Star Trek series that were a little disappointed, and it's all the time I have for tonight.
No, Tony, wait. Let's do the plot twist now. Guess what? Mm-hmm. We have one more Star Trek series to talk about. It's Star Trek: Strange New Worlds, in which everybody's favorite space dad, Christopher Pike,
you didn't know he was your favorite space dad,
Enterprise.
But he is. Yeah,
your new, but he is.
Your new
he is now.
Your
he
new
is.
Favorite.
He
your
is
new
now.
And they explore strange new worlds and learn things and grow as people in a series of standalone episodes with serialized emotional content and ongoing storylines that are happening in the background, while each episode also has things that allow it to stand alone. And
Jason, when you say it like that, it's like poetry.
Do we so, or as Tony would phrase it, in May of 2022, we discovered a new way to tell Star Trek stories.
It was similar to some of our technology from the 60s.
It was the old way.
We found some things in the archive and we dusted them off. Sometimes, Jason, sometimes the old ways are best.
Sometimes. I don't know. Did everybody love Strange New Worlds? I feel like we went through the desert to get here. How's everybody feeling about Strange New Worlds season one?
Strange New Worlds was a delight and something I looked forward to every week, and I think I was never disappointed. And sure, some episodes are better than others, but it's kind of an amazing thing that happens to also be a Star Trek thing in terms of the quality of those 10 episodes and how delightful the characters are and how charming and in many cases attractive the actors are. If you're someone who listens to The Incomparable and you haven't checked out Strange New Worlds, that's weird. It's also an interesting...
What are you doing?
Yeah, it's also, we have heard from some people, an entry point for Star Trek, which is weird, but totally works.
Yeah. I have heard that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Star Trek.
Vulcan Hello, I made a joke about like, well, if you haven't seen these TOS episodes that are directly referenced in here, you ought to go do it. But I'm sure you have, because otherwise, why are you watching this show and listening to this podcast? And I got multiple people who said, actually, I've never seen TOS, or this is my first Star Trek, or I've only watched modern Star Trek. And so I started like coming up with a list. It's like, well, here are the three TOS episodes you should watch. Maybe this TNG episode too, and just throw those in there because, people are... I think it's actually in some ways a great way to discover new Star Trek is to start with Strange New Worlds, because it's not, I think it's got a lot of stuff in it, right? It's got a lot of canon-y Star Trek lore stuff in it, but I feel like it doesn't require it, and that's good.
No, I think it's, it was pretty delightful from beginning to end, and my thing I wrote or I posted, Frisky Vulcans was not on my bingo card. I was kind of, my mouth kind of dropped because, as I said, you know, Star Trek isn't known for making people that frisky, and and certainly is not canon from the original series. But I loved how they worked that in. It was, I did go back. I have been going back and watching TOS episodes, like A Mock Time and Balance of Terror, and I definitely, but I liked this so much. As soon as it was over, I had to just binge watch the entire Discovery season two, because I was like, now I want to go back and I want more Spock and Pike. And I really enjoyed it. I forgot how many Klingons were in it. That was, but now I can fast forward.
Everybody does. Some of them are secret. That's how they get you.
That is the trick with them.
I didn't need to watch the Klingon parts to enjoy the parts with Pike and of course Spock. I remember this now from the Vulcan Hello, how you guys had would say, like, you know, the search for Spock.
Yeah, when is Spock going to actually show up in season two of Discovery?
And so I was like, when is it going to be? But then watching him, I would say that I haven't binge watched an entire season of Star Trek in a while, and I did just watch that season two, and it just made it better. And it also gave me a couple of moments where I thought, he's definitely evolved. Pike has evolved, and Spock, of course. The only thing I can't figure out is how did Spock actually and T'Pring actually get betrothed and be like, we're going to get married, like, 3 months from the end of the Discovery season two. I mean, Spock was a basket case.
I was in an asylum. They're very forgiving. Maybe she helped him out with it. I don't know. Yeah,
well, it could be.
No.
Yeah. Well, and my understanding is they're like promised to each other when they're children.
Oh,
it's like
an
arranged marriage. An
arranged marriage. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They are.
They seem pretty. Invested
into each other.
Well, I think that's what the kids call it. Invested.
He needed somebody to lean on for emotional support, Tony, and he went to bring emotional support. By the way, never lean on a Vulcan for emotional support. Don't do it.
No,
they'll just pinch your neck.
Surprised.
Why are you leaning?
They'll pinch your neck and you'll wake up in your underwear alone in your quarters. So just don't do it.
Yeah, I just love this season, and I love that they took the episodic thing, pretty seriously, although obviously there were threads that went through the whole season. But they were just threads, and it was such a relief, especially, compared to, say, watching Discovery any season, where to have some episodes that were pure fun popping up after episodes that were really, really stressful and tense. Mm-hmm. So
some of it may be like the nature of the world that we are living in right now, which affects all of our viewing experiences, but there is something extremely comforting about, watching an episode of television every week where you're 34 minutes in and it's like, things are really, really, really bad, but they're going to be fine in about 11 episodes. So keep watching, or 11 minutes. So keep watching, like the episodic nature where it's like, it's going to be wrapped up and it's going to be more or less okay. The show did continue to surprise me with characters popping up who I did not expect, or people perhaps dying or leaving in unexpected ways. So it felt like it learned from the 90s in all the best ways, which is impressive.
Yeah, and I have to say that I was probably the most skeptical about this series out of the five of us on this panel, I think it's safe to say, just because I've been very less than lukewarm on the tendency to go back and try to, let's recreate the magic of TOS, however we possibly can, like, oh, look, here are these characters that you love. We're going to name one of them after Khan just for fun. And it largely ended up working. And I like this more than I like really the Discovery seasons or the Picard seasons. And those were more experimental, which is what I had wanted. But I think structurally, the lesson is really the episodic nature, like everyone was saying. It really allows you to not get bogged down in the ways that the Discovery and Picard seasons have been. And I was even a little like reserved in my praise of the season initially, where they were just sort of finding their footing or whatever. And it had been like, oh, well, you know, I really liked Picard the first three episodes when it was airing against Discovery. And then I got really burned. So I better like hold out. And, you know, I liked it at episode four, Memento Mori. I liked it amazingly for Spock Amok at episode five. Like, I thought that was fantastic that they could get to that point with so few episodes, really, before you could do like the classic stereotype of a body swap in sci-fi story, so that you can play with these tropes that have already been done in Star Trek many times, but combine them in new and interesting ways and with character development, and not drag anything out over the season, to not make the whole season about fighting the Gorn, to not make the whole season about you know, Pike's quest to undo his future death or something. Like, it's all sprinkled in there with Lon's, you know, trauma, and with Pike's fear of his future demise. Well, he thinks demise. And you can visit those moments, but it doesn't become the story of the entire season. And I really appreciate that.
I think they struck an amazing balance between the episode of the week science fiction premises that they have, and some are better than others, or at least better executed than others, but also having those character moments, which is what I love about Discovery, that I guess it was like, oh, you can do both. Why did Discovery forget to do both? and not just our, you know, our top three, you know, Pike, number one, and Spock, but all the next levels of characters, and then those characters bouncing off of each other in delightful ways, and seeing that, you know, Uhura's friendship with Chapel is different than her friendship with Ortega, or you know, the way Laan works with one is different than how she is with Pike, and all of those interconnections that just, for 10 episodes of Star Trek, these characters feel way more fleshed out than any of our, you know, our 90s era Star Trek characters got to be in like entire 22 episode seasons.
Oh, yeah. And what is amazing to me is that in just 10 episodes, we know Ortega's. We know how Ortega's is going to react to something. We know how Chapel is going to react, or Mbenga, or any of them. And I still don't know the names of all the Discovery Bridge crew.
Right. I mean, it's a little bit of an unfair comparison because they weren't in the main cast.
They weren't intended to be.
It's the weird thing where Discovery chose a main cast that didn't include the bridge crew. And so the bridge crew is like this weird in-between point. Mm. And they've tried to make them characters now. But I agree. Yeah. I think the episode 10, there's that moment where Laan beams over from the Farragut and she's got her hair down and she hugs Pike. And like, we know enough about Laan that for her to do that, you're like, whoa, what happened to you? Like, we know her so well that seeing her different hits us. And like, that's kind of hard to do in this few number of episodes to make us realize like, oh, there's something strange going on here. Or the, you know, Hammer dying in episode 9, which was always the plan. They cast that character in order to kill him, because you can't kill all the canonical characters, so you got to kill someone, I guess. But like, he's not only integrated in Uhura's arc, but his death is affecting, and like, he's only really in, my theory being that they added him in to the first couple of episodes, because they added him in and retroactively placed him in some earlier episodes when they figured out they were going to do this with him. But like, so he's really only in like substantively three or four episodes, and yet his death hits hard. And also you kind of feel really sad because you love that character when it gets to that point. Like, very accomplished work to tell stories every week and get these characters to feel like characters who matter. And I will admit, there are some plots where I felt like I could have used a little more plot, but I understood why they didn't give me more plot, because they did want to use the plot to really, again, the classic, they want to use the plot to get you to understand the characters, because it is about the characters. And I agree it's about the characters. There were moments where I wanted a little more of the plot, where they take some leaps and I'm like, ah, I wish you had not taken that leap and actually done the work there. But still, all in all, what a trick to get these characters to be so well defined, and also like to think about Laan and not think, oh well, she's a Noonien Singh and that's like, she's just defined as a canon reference. It's like, well, no, now she's not. And Ortegas is I read an article where the actress who plays Ortega says that she's heard from a bunch of people in the military who are like pilots and like, you nailed it. Like that's the attitude. It's like, that's a character that's fun to have on Star Trek. She's a little Worf-like in the sense that you got to have somebody who's like, I say we fight, right? And that was always Worf. They said, no, Worf, not now. And it was never time for Worf to fight. But you got to have somebody like that because you want these characters to kind of like push against each other. And to do that all in these 10 episodes, so impressive.
Well, and like the greatest trick that season two of Discovery did, they made Captain Pike an interesting character.
Right.
He's never been interesting. He's introduced as being glum and surly, and he thinks he wants to quit in the cage pilot.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey Hunter is an attractive block of wood. And Anson Mount is just personable and engaging. And he is. He is your favorite space dad. He's awesome. And by the end of that season, I was like, I want the spinoff.
Funny about Anson Mount. Well, they built the sets. About Anson Mount is Anson Mount has been, I think, for most of his career, cast as a handsome block of wood.
I watched all of Hell on Wheels, which is Anson Mount and Cole Meany, and Anson Mount is angry cowboy guy, and he's got a big beard, and he's got super long hair, and he always looks like he's a week overdue for a shower. He's still a very attractive man, but he is a different kind of, he's burly, hairy, attractive man. I don't know what kind of attractive man he is in this, but different.
Space dad.
But he is not funny, like funny space dad. His handsomeness and his charisma has multitudes to it, and it's kind of frustrating that he exists as a human. So you know, we will punish you by casting you as a character who can't talk in a failed Marvel show. That'll teach you, Anson Mount.
That's insane.
Right, just we don't want to use your charisma. You'll just be silent. And talking about Gene watching season two of Discovery, I do think that's the secret sauce in Strange New Worlds is usually you do a first season and everybody's figuring everybody else out. And while there are new characters in this show, Pike, Spock, and Number One were already cast. They had a bunch of scenes together in Discovery. They did some short treks together. They had time, and the writers coming into the season knew what they had with Ethan Peck, with Anson Mount, and with Rebecca Romijn. They knew what they had, and I think that was part of it too, because I don't think you get the Pike in this season if they hadn't seen what Anson Mount had done with the material in Discovery season two and said, oh, because I suspect he was cast for Discovery as a handsome block of wood, right?
Yeah.
I discovered he's like Daishin Captain. And then they saw his range and they're like, oh, this guy. Yeah, I'm going to have him cooking for his crew and holding tongs and telling people he's going to turn the
handing the apron
around
off to Spock. Yeah.
Like, that guy can do that. Let's have him do that.
And the smartest thing they've done is, because this is why I hate prequels. There are almost no prequels that I like. The smartest thing they've done is Pike knows what's going to happen to him just like we do. And that's what makes his arc interesting.
Yeah, narratively brilliant to have the character who we all know is doomed know it himself, because it totally changes and makes, it works really well.
I was going to say about the characters, like the thing about Discovery, it definitely in season one, we didn't know anything about the bridge crew. But in season two, it was almost as if Pike came in the way Pike is, and he got to know them all. He wanted to know them all. He wanted to be the anti-Lorca. And because I forgot, you know, until rewatching it, that, oh, this is when we start to see, like, Detmer and Owo being, like, you know, this dynamic duo, and we see the other members of the crew, and then you see Tilly, like, just becoming so Tilly. I mean, that's when, you know, she says, you know, effing on the bridge and stuff like that. So anyway, I just think it was almost like he worked his magic on Discovery for one season to make it like more of a place where the captain was like your favorite space dad.
Yep. It's, I mean, I don't know. Look, was it a perfect season? No, there are some episodes that work less well and ones that work better. But even, you know, even the ones that don't work that well usually have redeeming things about them. And I would say most of them work very well. Like, even the worst episode of the season, which for me is probably the one that's the Ursula Le Guin knockoff.
Mm-hmm. Hate it.
It still had a lot that worked.
Yeah, it still had a bunch of things in it that were good. But I would say that I wouldn't call it bad. I think that it was kind of not great. But most of them were good. And then a bunch of them were great. And like, that's a pretty good, it's a pretty good batting average. And they did like Spock Amok is a wacky episode, and they managed to pull it off. And they did it in episode 5, where that's normally a thing you might reserve for season 3 to do that. But they used the body swap between Spock and T'Pring to sort of delineate their characters rather than have the joke be now that you know who they are when you see them swapped, it's funny. It was more like they're walking a mile in each other's shoes, and you both see one of the, talk about Pike knowing his fate. Us knowing their fate as a couple is interesting because you can view it as a doomed romance. But what the show has done is make you realize, one, you know, that there was more substance to this relationship, and that two, you empathize with T'Pring and see why she would say in a mock time, I didn't want to be, he's a bit of a legend. And
the
want to be the consort of a legend, right? Like you start to get like, she's her own person here. And I think she's, you know, going to be overwhelmed by the Spockness. And so we get all of that. It's very cleverly done for something that I, you know, body swap episode, I'm always going to roll my eyes at it. They're so cliched, and they killed it. They nailed it.
The rehabbing of some female characters that were very underserved in TOS. Yeah.
Well, Chapel.
Chapel, who in like 4 seconds, I guess, both does and probably gets to be more of a character than Chapel ever was in the original series.
Chapel has a couple moments in the original series, but only like literally a couple moments. And then otherwise her character is, she has a crush on Spock, that's one. And her other big character note is she has whatever hypo Dr. McCoy needs. That's her other character beat, is can hand the doctor things.
She joins Starfleet to find her lost fiance.
Her lost boyfriend.
Who's a robot now.
Sorry,
I spoiled a 60-year-old episode.
It's a huge rehab. I mean, okay, step one, cast Jess Bush. Step two, put her in a cat suit. There is no step three. There's no step three. No, they made Chapel, and you get the Chapel Spock relationship, because in TOS it's like she has a crush on him. Well, here we see that it's so much more than that, right? Because it is this kind of like, she's kind of coming out of bad relationships. She ends up really connecting with Spock and realizing that he's never gonna be into her, and it's you know, there's so much more color and detail to it than
She has casual relationships, and she's like, nah, I'm not looking for a relationship. But then it's like, well,
she kind of falls for the guy that she can't get.
Yeah, which is brilliant. I mean,
even Ethan Peck, you know, Spock is such an indelible character in like the history of television. So to take that role on is hard, and at least, you know, he had Zachary Quinto do it before he did, so it's like he's like the third regular Spock, so it's like the pressure's off a little bit, but still there's a lot of pressure there. And even as sort of like proto Spock pre-TOS, still it's a real challenge. And I think he has done a good job of sort of showing that this is a Spock who's still trying to find his way, but he's going to end up being the Spock that we know. And then in that brilliant really just our friend Anthony Johnston said, you know, the show all season long was not afraid to touch the third rail of TOS, essentially. And in episode 10, they just grabbed it and said, we're doing TOS now. And so he has to play TOS Spock in that. And his performance is different. And I think I was impressed with that too, that Ethan Peck has enough of a handle on Spock that he was able to do that. And I just, that was that moxie of grabbing the third rail. I just wanted to mention it again, because we speculated actually at the end of season 2 of Discovery, when we talked about how they built the sets, that, you know, could you do essentially TOS in except with a 21st century sensibility? And I think Strange New Worlds has shown that you can, like without a doubt, they've shown it. But also, Quality of Mercy, that 10th episode, by retracing the steps of a classic series episode, it literally is showing you what TOS looks like in the terms of the 21st century. And my response to that was not, oh, I can't believe the uniforms are different. I can't believe the sets are slightly different. Right. Which, as I know, some fans are out there. That's a response. My response is yes. Like, yes, I like it. I like it. It looks like it feels like Star Trek while also feeling modern. And that is like, I think that we saw in Star Trek over the last like 30 years, producer after producer who just doesn't want to go there, wants to dodge that bullet. Like, you can't go back to the original Star Trek. They're afraid it'll be too goofy. It'll be too campy. The uniforms will be too colorful. Like, we're just not going to ever touch it. And as Anthony said, Strange New Worlds is just like,
what do you got? Give it to us.
Where are the parts you're afraid of? I'm just going to do that, right? I'm going to grab the third rail, and we're going to do this. And
we're
going to
bite
works.
The third rail. You know?
Yeah. It's it. You're afraid of like being close to TOS. What if we do a shot for shot remake of portions of TOS? How about that? It's like, okay, good. Okay, do it.
And that episode was brilliant. I loved it, and it was enough to make me go, you know, I hope they eventually get to do the last 2 years of Kirk's mission, because why the hell not? But you talk about the third rail, you talk about Moxie, you know what is the biggest, ballsiest thing this season did?
Cybok.
They're going to redeem Cybok. They're going to redeem Star Trek V. That's insane.
Honestly.
Honestly,
that moment where it at
I gasped.
And I want to say that's a fun episode. That's the pirate episode.
Yeah.
And there's a great Jesse James Keitel does a great Star Trek guest star villain performance in that, which anybody who watched a lot of TNG and Deep Space Nine, like, they're those guest star villains who are in it for one episode, and you're like, I think we're gonna see Jesse James Keitel again, by the way, but because emergency beam out at the end, right? It's like, goodbye, I'll be in another episode later, goodbye. But you get to, so it's wacky pirates and like, And the villain is like, I'm really just here to get the codes from T'Pring so that I can release my boyfriend who's a prisoner. And I'm thinking, well, that's interesting. And they get to that moment where Spock's like, I think I know who it is. And I think to myself, no, surely no. And he's like, I think it might be. And I'm like, no, Spock, no, they wouldn't, right? They wouldn't. And the answer to the question of anything in Strange New Worlds, when you say they wouldn't, the answer is, yeah, yes, they would. Whatever it is. Yeah, they would. They're like, yeah, you know, when we said that there was this weird illegitimate son of Sarek who was a hippie cult leader in Star Trek V, a movie that nobody really likes. He's in our show. Yeah, he's in our show now.
We're gonna do it.
Yeah,
we're gonna do it.
And they are gonna redeem him. They're totally gonna redeem him.
And now the thing that cracks me up is everyone is like, "Oh, well, they've cast Kirk," but Kirk said he only met Pike once. I think the way they've retconned a little bit, and you know, like, this final episode gives more depth to the menagerie. It gives more depth to Balance of Terror. I'd like to think they're gonna make what Kirk said a joke. Oh, I only met him once.
I don't think so. I think that they've set up that Pike now is going to be doing everything behind the scenes to educate Kirk so that he's ready to take over as the captain of the Enterprise when Pike leaves the ship. I feel like it's going to be the secret, guardian angel. Exactly. Yeah. The tweaking of canon, again, I like their attitude toward it, right? It's like, there's that, in Arena, Captain Kirk says, oh, this creature that they called the Gorn, like, he's never heard of the Gorn before. It's like, all right, you could probably headcanon that away if you want to. But I like that the producers are like, yeah, that's not really definitive enough for us. So we're going to we're going to use the Gorn, and we're going to make them like alien and kind of like Predator, but also,
we're going to make them interesting.
Like, whatever. We're going to just do that. And I'm fine with it. I'm a lifelong Star Trek fan. I'm fine with them finding the little cracks in canon and prying them apart. I'm okay with it. I'd rather they do that than just sort of listlessly, you know, repeat.
Some parts of canon are bad.
Yes.
Right. Or, you know, or unnecessary.
Shall we also revisit women not being allowed to be captains?
Yeah.
In Starfleet? You know.
Well, that's...
Let's pretend that that didn't happen, okay?
Well, I've already had canon that one, yes. Which is like literally Janice Lester is an awful person, and they say you can't be captain, and she's like, you just hate women being captains. And they're like, yeah, that's what we told her. What about all the other women captains? We don't talk about it. That's what we told her to get rid of her, and it didn't work. And she's still here, and she's found a body swapping device again on a... Yeah, anyway, that's my headcanon for that, is that they were lying to her because she was a pain and they didn't want to hire her. Which, you know, I don't know. Yeah, anything, what have we not said about Strange New World season one? Anything else you got?
I had some issues with some little plot things, but you know, yeah. I loved the whole thing, and I love Dr. Mbenga. I didn't entirely buy his whole story, but I love him. I want more stories about him.
Like that, like his fishing hat. That was good.
Yeah.
Yes, hat.
I loved the fishing hat.
I liked him in that episode, Elysium Kingdom, with as the king.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that he just pulled that off really well. I know what's going on, sort of, but I don't, you know, no one else does. And then
he's figuring it out. And the whole thing. That's an example of one of those things where the plot resolves itself too fast because they really just wanted to have fun with it. And then they're like, oh, and his daughter leaves and she's fine. At the end, I'm like, okay, it's fine. It was a fun ride. I know you want to. And they're like, we told you this would be standalone. So we're resolving it all now. I'm like, okay, you got me.
And I mean, everybody looks like they had fun in the episode. They had a great way of, you know, resetting people in different roles. Yeah.
And redressing the Enterprise set, which was also great, right? Like, they didn't go to a fantasy world. They were literally still on the Enterprise, and Mbenga is able to use the computer and stuff. That was
hilarious. Yeah. That was so good. But I keep thinking back to it and thinking it's not even that Anson Mount has great range and great comedic chops. Can you imagine William Shatner being that unvain to pull off that role in that story?
No. I need to be the king in this one. I need to be the king.
Captain Pike is turning into my favorite captain, and that's really surprising.
Yeah. He's a pretty good captain.
He really is.
Yes, well, and he makes a good waffle. That's what I hear.
And he knows how to use his tongs to punctuate, don't make me turn this car around.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Got a tongue based tongs.
Yeah, I think... So Scott and I had this conversation on the last episode of the Vulcan Hello, which was after being really enthusiastic about the idea of Star Trek getting into the streaming world and trying to tell modern Star Trek stories across many seasons. And I think that still could be done, but it has been really spotty in how it's been executed. And then you look at Strange New World season one and you think, oh, maybe not. I'm starting to think maybe they took the formula way too far with Discovery, and that Strange New Worlds has basically said, what if we ease off a little bit and it's recognizably Star Trek and recognizably modern all in one? And I don't want to be the person who says, yeah, this show that's just kind of doing a version of TOS and it's all standalones, do Star Trek like that. And I want Star Trek to try different things. And we're in this era where there's multiple Star Trek shows. So I want them to experiment and try different things. But I keep coming back to thinking, I hope that the other Star Treks that they choose to do learn from season one of Strange New Worlds, because I think they got the formula. Maybe there's not a right answer, but it's closer to ideal, and that maybe those other shows need to recalibrate a little bit to be more like this. And I hate to be the person to say that, because I was really enthusiastic about the idea of like, whoa, what Star Trek looked like as a modern streaming series. But having seen at least how it was executed, this is better. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they say, you know, oh, they're standalone episodes. Oh, they're just character arcs. It's not just character arcs. It's not just.
No. And they're ongoing storylines that come back.
Ongoing storylines.
Yeah. Their watchword was just that if Captain Kirk falls in love with somebody like Edith Keeler in one episode, in the next episode, he's going to be feeling the emotional ramifications of it, which didn't happen in TOS.
And if we run into the Gorn, we may learn things about them that are going to come back and be useful three or four episodes later.
If we run into Illyrians, maybe that'll be relevant in a future episode, right? Because they plotted all this stuff out. Joe, what do you think about this, like, serialized storytelling versus standalone? You know, do you get where I'm coming from, which is, like, I'm hesitant to say, you know, start playing it safe, but at the same time, I look at Strange New Worlds and I think, oh, maybe safer is better.
Well, I don't think it's playing it safe per se. I think it's playing to the strengths of television, especially weekly released television. I think something that has hurt Star Wars in some cases as well as Star Trek is if you try to take a single story and stretch it out over like X number of episodes, you're going to end up doing a disservice to some of those episodes in how they get to handle bits and pieces of that storyline, whereas these, you never have to sort of like suffer through something to get to the other part. It can feel much more like it used to, which is appealing in that way, but it is not necessarily, as we've discussed, it's not as definitively old school as it used to be. Right. So I don't think it's safe. It's just a different kind of structure. So there's a different level of difficulty. Like they could still screw this up. This is easy to screw up.
Sure. They just haven't done it. I don't know. I thought that that episode of Picard, where the Mandalorian just came in for a while, that was great. Just dropped him in there. Like the story was sagging, so they just had the Mandalorian come by and do an episode. Oh, maybe I'm mixing things up again. Any other final thoughts about these many Star Treks? We get a little bit of a break. There'll be some animated stuff, but the live action stuff seems like is going to be in a break until probably toward the end of the year. They'll probably make some announcements at Comic-Con. But after a rough few seasons there, the first 2/3 of this episode, I'm feeling way better about Star Trek now. Thanks, Captain Pike.
I mean, I could just say the same things I've been saying throughout. I'm stunned. I'm stunned that I love Captain Pike.
Captain Pike, you know? Anson Mount.
Yeah,
and,
it's good.
But just the whole show.
He made a cameo appearance in a recent Marvel movie that I will not spoil other than to say that I saw him and I thought, oh, Anson Mount. And I was not excited for the character he was playing and I knew he wouldn't be there very long. And yet I was like, just so happy to see Anson Mount.
Did he get to say anything?
I'm a fan. Hey, you see something, sort of.
Okay.
Sort of. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of Star Trek. No, it's a standalone episode of The Incomparable. So when we come back next time, we'll just the emotional arc will continue as it always does, but the plot will be different. Let me thank my guests for being here on this episode. David J. Lohr, thank you.
Thank you. I look forward to coming back to the Vulcan Hello for my Faltorpan.
Yeah, we're going to put your Katra back in your body.
Yeah.
Tony Sindelar, thank you.
I vote against war. Thank you for having me. All right.
This is not the shopping mall voting sequence. Gene McDonald, thank you.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
And Joe Rosensteel, thank you.
Thank you. I'll just be here, the guardian at the gate, the Borg that traveled through time for no reason and protecting this anomaly that no one's going to investigate or care about. The end.
All right.
You're in the Federation now, though. Congratulations.
And I've been your host, Jason Snell. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. We will see you next week.